is a lie. It hides the truth. Beyond the neon lights lurk dark shadows that feed on those that stray too close. In the heart of Tokyo walk creatures never mentioned in the guidebooks. Creatures that need the blood of the living. From Shinjuku to Shibuya, the undead are the hidden power that control this city. Learn the hidden truth in this narrative podcast by independent author Brent Thomas. Learn the hidden truth of Bloody Tokyo. Chapter 3. She walked down the sidewalk at a pace that set her apart from the surrounding commuters. Her gait was an uneven one that tossed her long hair from side to side in a surprisingly rhythmic sway. The gait itself was almost as much of a stumble as a walk, just as it was almost equal parts vulnerability as aggression. There was a sense of danger about her, a soft darkness. Despite this warning, there were those who kept shifting near her and traveling in her wake. Their eyes flitted about her frame and the clothing that lightly adorned it. A thin shirt, thin enough that you could almost imagine what lay on the underneath, and baggy sweatpants that did little to hide. The belt strap was loose enough that the sweats held on tremblingly to her hips. Every fifth step threatened to shake the pants from the precipice. Often the hem would dip just low enough to reveal some of the curve beneath, but just before too much was revealed, her hand would catch the fabric and give it a tug, setting it once again at the top of her hips. Only the perilous journey would soon start again. She would look back to find sets of eyes rapidly darting away. A paper mask hid her expression, and much of her face, from those who were eager to see if she was as pretty as they hoped. And so she walked through the busy streets, attracting eyes and attracting a few followers. Soon she would turn and head into the narrow alleys. She would journey around the maze of connecting streets. Her stagger would increase. Her hand would delay its rescue. If any still followed, they would notice that they were practically alone with this strange girl, who suddenly seemed far less dangerous and far more vulnerable. The lack of eyes and her imagined weakness would make them feel brave and strong. Their belief that they were owed something by the world would make them even more dangerous. Then she would stop. The men, and it was always men at this point, would keep coming forward. They would speak rough words to show their potency. They assumed that a girl dressed like this would only come to such a place for one reason, and they were well prepared to give her what they imagined she wanted. But she would wait. She would allow them to fully embrace their own fate. A touch was all it would take. That was her line, a prod, a grope, a caress. Then she would turn. She would show them the true face behind the mask. Their last moments would be of terror. Terror similar to that which they had inflicted on others. Others they had deemed as weak and wanting it. She would break them apart. Their shattered wrists would spout out their gore. Torn throats would unleash torrents. She would feed and dispose of the trash of humanity that was left behind. She would stand there in the haunted alleyways that was more a spiderweb than anything else. She would shed her now blood-sodden garments, and there, under the flickering electric lights, she would fetch a simple bag containing a large plastic bottle of water, tissues, and a change of clothes. The water and tissues would be used to quickly wash away the drying remains, focusing on her face and hands. She little cared if the blood dyed her skin a faint pink. Sometimes, that would make her still look like one of the living. When she was satisfied, she would dress in a tracksuit, something dark in case the blood had pooled somewhere about her person. But tonight was different. After feeding, when the blood still steamed on her skin, she looked to a certain pool of darkness. "I hear you've been making the rounds," she said to the darkness. Shinichi frowned. He wanted to make his own sudden appearance as he had with Koike. Still, it should come as no surprise that Sana had known he was there. Not only was she older than Koike, even as elderly as he appeared, this was also part of her domain. I just came to talk, Shinichi said as he stepped forward. Really? It seems to me as if you came to watch. There was a subtle twist to her frame as she said this, a subtle tilt to her head. Shinichi couldn't say what it was exactly, but it caused a stirring in him. Seeing her like this almost made him sympathize for those humans caught in her anglerfish trap. She smiled a smile that could very easily be mocking him. Or it could be genuine. Shinichi cursed himself and pushed foolish thoughts out of his head. I want to make a child, he told her. Then go ahead and do so. You don't need my help for that. Not in this life. Yamagata is considering it, but he has yet to make a decision. Yamagata likes to consider things from many angles. She took out her kit and began pouring water to wash off the caked on blood. Do you have any potentials in mind? A few. I haven't decided. Have you talked with them? Some. There was always debate on the best way to make a child. Get to know them as humans and turn them, or just take them based on gut instinct. Extremes lay on either side of the discussion, with serial makers who would turn a human, grow to dislike the child, and destroy it within 3 moons. Others had spent generations grooming certain families, keeping them in thrall to make what they would consider the perfect companion. I want to know your thoughts, Shinichi added after a considerable pause. Why would you ask me? I have no interest in making a child. As Sena spoke, she turned away from him. She was satisfied that she had washed enough of the blood off of her face and hands. Now it was time to turn her attention to the blood-sodden garment she was wearing. These she stripped off and neatly tucked into her bag containing the water and tissues. You say that now, Shinichi continued. Perhaps you even believe it. Don't get me wrong, you are one of the fiercest hunters I know, and I respect you for that. But you are still a woman. And, as such, I'm sure that many of your thoughts... There was a sudden flurry of motion. Sena turned and attacked. Her face, at once beautiful and feral, had all the hallmarks of their shared legacy. Her fingers had given way to talons. She was bowling him over, on top of him, pinning him to the street. Her talons hovered just over his neck. A quick puncture would weaken him considerably. Tell me, little worm, as we are both dead, damned things, why should my sex have anything to do with choosing a child? You forget what we are now. I misspoke. Shinichi spoke coolly, slowly, trying to show none of the fear and anger he felt inside. Was it his fault that he had lived his life being taught that women were little more than sources of relief and breeding stock? That was how they were best suited to serve the Empire, after all. And he had survived a long time, but not long enough to escape the belief that women had insight into all things concerning childcare, even if those women were dead ones. I misspoke, he repeated, and scrambled for a way to cancel his offense. I am trying to choose between a man and a woman. As a woman, you can give me insight into how they feel about the change. As he spoke, he realized that this was also a truth. Slowly, Sena relaxed. She would forgive him, and she would give him her insight, but she would remember. You lie well, little worm. She slid off of him and stood. There, in the half-darkness of the alley, he looked up at her nude and blood-stained figure. He had never seen anyone more beautiful. Facebook, and by visiting DeadlyTroubadour.com.